Now, we're going to read, as you know, in the book of Proverbs. And my thoughts are to try and connect some of the major subjects that are in both Proverbs and James. Now, you know that I was so simple as to think that nobody else had thought of this but me. And I thought I was going to bring something new to what I'm like that hadn't been dealt with before. Accidentally, without any thought at all, I was having to read that famous book that all you men use. It's the words of the New Testament. And to my surprise, I found at the very last sentence on the Epistle of James, James is the Proverbs of the New Testament. I says to myself, here I am. Thought I had seen something new and was known before likely I was born. So I want to say to you, younger brethren, watch yourselves. You might think you're giving out something that nobody else has thought about. And that you might think you're saying something that nobody else has dreamt of. And before you know where you are, somebody has had it out before you even dreamt of it. So be very careful that you don't think that you're unique in what you say. Now, in case you'd want to know as to what way we're going to handle this, and that'd be difficult, now don't think of that, and try and bring a few Christians around to hear it if you can. I'm not good at preaching to these things here. I'd rather have people's faces now. I don't know what's the idea, but I still like faces. And what I would say is this, I'm going to try and connect the wisdom in James with the wisdom in Proverbs. Any child could see that those two are major subjects. Then a second subject that we're going to deal with is the use of the tongue, how we speak, and the words we use from Proverbs and from James. Now, anybody knows that that's a subject that's quite clear in James. And then we are going to look at, maybe not in this way order at all, but we're going to look at the controlling our tempers. And that comes in both. Sometimes Christians, you know, would lose their temper and would get a wee bit upset. And we need to know how to have patience and to bear with things. And we find that in both groups fairly extensively dealt with. You see, we live in a day when many assemblies have been upset just because a man loses his temper. And he says things he wouldn't normally say. Maybe they wouldn't do it around here, the nation quite around here. But in some quarters, it's different. And we just need to be warned against anything along that line. Now, there's another line of things that I'll be dealing with maybe earlier than the last one, and that is wealth and how to use it, and poverty and how to overcome it. Now, those subjects are all in both books. Now, that's what I want to get at. That's why I'm taking them up. Now, those titles are, I didn't give you great titles for them or anything like that, but you'll get an idea of what you're going to hear about. You're going to hear about how to talk, eh? And you're going to hear about how to use your money. And you're going to hear about how to control your temper. And you're going to hear tonight about the importance of wisdom. Now shall we turn to the book of Proverbs and read a few verses. Now we couldn't read all as you know. We just read a little to get us introduced to the subject. The book of Proverbs now, and chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1, and we'll just begin on verse number 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Now look at down on verse 20. Wisdom crieth out, she uttereth her voice in the streets. Now chapter 2. If thou criest after knowledge, and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her, that's verse 3, verse 2 is there, that. If thou seekest her as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. Now, I don't think I'll read too much because I couldn't read all this. By the way, wisdom, the between wisdom and ways in Proverbs, you have it 100 times. And if I read all them verses to you, you'd have no meeting tonight if I wouldn't be ministering at all. So wisdom itself is in over 40 times in the book. So I don't need to read too much there. Now we turn now to James. We're not up too much because James is much more concise than Proverbs. Now, verse number 5 of chapter 1, verse 4 says, "But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering." Now, is in chapter 3 for another reference. Look at verse number 13 of chapter 3. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Now that will do for our readings. When you turn to the book of Proverbs and to the Epistle James, you find there are a number of connections between the two, and I want to mention just some briefly that lie on the surface of anyone reading the two books over. They're both divided into five parts. Now, I'm not going to give you the parts of Proverbs, but I think if you look it up, you'll see that there are five divisions in Proverbs. It's distinctly marked out for you. You have no trouble finding them. And you'll find that the five chapters in James, broadly speaking, just divide that epistle up into five parts. But what is amazing about both books, and should be noticed, that though Solomon was the writer of Proverbs and was deeply interested in the erection of the temple and all its ritual, and was constantly involved in the wonderful structure where God's presence was enjoyed, yet he never mentions those things in his book of Proverbs. That's amazing. He's not dealing with the ritual. He never mentions the sacrifices or any of that line of things. He keeps that out of Proverbs altogether. And that's a surprise, because you'd nearly think that would be the big subject that would be upon his mind. And is it not amazing that when you come to James, which is not a popular book for many to speak upon, that you read it in vain for any great reference to the cross work of Christ, and you'd read it in vain to find any great reference to assembly principles, and you'd read it all through and you say, no, it's all different to the rest. It's so strange. It's not the same as what we'd expect. Now, the two books are distinct in that way. Now, you say, what do the stress? Now, this is what we've been trying to do in these meetings now, and you mightn't like it, but do try to appreciate it as best you can now. He's going to tell us in both books practical living. In other words, it deals with ethics. It deals with moral behavior, how to behave ourselves in this world, and how to act with one another. You say, I didn't think you were coming to tell us that, and God, what or why we know it well enough. Now, just wait a minute. You mightn't just know it too well. Because sometimes it's easier living that we're hearing about the clock quoted by Mr. Ferguson, or somebody quoted a clock that people you know with well above, you know the rhyme, well above was since you love, well that'd be for me, but Laura, well below was since you know, well that's another story. Now, we don't always know how to act with one another, and we don't always know how to act in the world. And very often, much of our teaching never touches that line of things. It will show us assembly principles, it will teach us very clearly a church doctrine, and it will deal a good wee bit and rightly too, mind you. These are big things. With the work of Christ and atonement and his priesthood and his all that, and then prophetic subjects, oh, you love that down here, and hey, the coming out and all those wonderful groups of the Revelation and so on. Those are all dealt with. And yet you find in your Bible very clear instructions about little things that we would hardly think about, and about matters that we need to know as the Lord's dear people. You see, God has not only given us a book guiding us as to how we act collectively, but he has given us a book showing us how to act as individuals, so that when I'm reading Proverbs or reading James, I'm thinking particularly now, I'm not saying exclusively, but particularly, how to act as an individual. Now, as an individual, I would need to know how to act. And if I need to know how to act, that means I would need to know, I would need to have wisdom. Because only by being wise will I know how to act in different circumstances. Now, all of us find ourselves in this world. It was a marvel for us to be saved. It was wonderful. And no doubt, as you all know, I was saved at school, and therefore I had special difficulties that maybe some of the older ones wouldn't have. He used to say, and I, when I was a boy, it's hard putting an old head on young shoulders. And it was just difficult enough for me as a boy to know what way to act. And so, you can know, no idea, you older folk don't know what it's like for a boy to sit down to remember the Lord, and just to know what and how to act in that way. And then how to act at school, and how to behave myself with the boys at school, and then to go to employment and know how to behave amongst workers. Now remember, dear soul, these are important things. And we all know that the Christian as an individual now has responsibilities before the eyes of God and before the eyes of his fellow man, and he's viewed and he needs wisdom. Now, of course, you know right well, without me telling you, the opposite of wisdom is folly. And you know there's nothing so unbecoming as a child of God to be acting the fool. Now, I know that we have play actors amongst us, as I better use that phrase. We had those who felt it was a great thing to be able to play the fool and act the fool. I never saw one and turn out well. I'm giving you time to think about that. I've known them that could imitate Hitler, and they could imitate this one, and they could imitate that one, and they could imitate anything, and they would give you a big play, even after preaching the gospel. Make a whole night's fun at the supper table. And tell jokes and yarns to have everybody nearly falling on the floor with laughter. Now, that's not the way God expects us. I don't say we should always just be that harsh and hard way of things. You know I don't believe in that. But at the same time, we do need, as God's dear people, to be a sober, sensible people in this world. Now we do. Wisdom, as you would understand, is something that doesn't come naturally to us. Now, before we go any further, we want you to notice, now please notice, that James is wise enough to distinguish between earthly wisdom and natural wisdom, and worldly wisdom. We'll deal with that in a moment or two, and true wisdom. You see, the child of God, in the eyes of the world, may look like a fool. You used to hear about the son of William Kelly's, was it, at the university or somewhere, and he came out with some expression or something to the professor. And I said, where did you hear that? Oh, he says, I heard that from my father. I says, who's your father? Oh, he says, he's William Kelly. Could I have a talk with him? And of course, when he had a talk with William Kelly, do you know what he said to him? He says, man, you're a fool. With the knowledge you have, you're a fool. Mr. Kelly's answer to him was a very important one. For which word? Aye, for which word? He was a fool in the eyes of a worldly man, because he wasn't using his ability, but he was no fool in the eyes of God. Now these are things that we need to know, that there is such a thing as worldly wisdom and craftiness and all that. That's nothing to do with Christianity. At the same time, the wise man for God may be viewed by the world as a fool. Now that doesn't mean that he's acting the fool. but to feel that he's losing his energies and losing his efforts and losing his strength for something that they think's unimportant. Whereas all the time, he's using it for the glory of God and in light of eternity. Now, Oathkirk's method very clear where you get this wisdom. Not nice. You know, it's no use of talking about something if you can't get it. There's no use of telling people about how important the thing is. We'll deal with that in a moment or two. But there's no use of telling people if you can't find it. Now it says James, and you all know the verse, don't you? If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And he gives it freely. Doesn't hold it back. Now let us get down for a moment to one fact. There's one great storehouse of eternal wisdom, and that's God himself. And all true wisdom emanates from him. He's the great fountainhead of all true wisdom. Now, I'll put it this way. Supposing I could get your mind or my mind, I'm not saying it'll ever happen, absolutely in agreement with the Almighty, both minds would be perfect in wisdom, because we'd be thinking along with God. Now, you dear young believers, if there be such a thing in the meeting, don't you forget that God expects your mind to develop. And he expects mine to develop. And he expects that when it develops, we look at things and see things as he sees them. And that the wisdom of the Almighty will in some way or other be reflected in our way of acting and in our way of thinking as well as in what we do. Now, James lets us know that worldly wisdom has, he gives us three features of it. And he shows us that it's earthly. And he shows us that it's soulish. He shows us its emptiness. He shows us the source of it. Now you think it over. The source of it is Satan. That is, worldly wisdom has a source, and that's the devil. Christian wisdom, or divine wisdom, has a source, and that's God. Now, can you follow that? Hope you can see that. That is to say, the worldly man, he uses his craftiness and so on. That's the old devil that was crafty, wasn't he? That's all like the devil. But the child of God doesn't act in craft, and he doesn't act in subtlety, and he doesn't play tricks on things, and he doesn't play deceit on people. He's honest and straight, he's upright and true. Why? He's like he's living God, his Father. The living God, his Father. These are things that we should ponder continuously, because you see, the danger is that we would mistake not your shrewdness and craftiness for divine wisdom. Now, that's got nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. You could be as crafty a man as ever stood in County. Is this County Antrim? I suppose this is County Antrim. Is that right? Or County Derry? County Antrim. County Antrim. If the craftiest man that ever lived in it. And you wouldn't be spiritual at all. Wouldn't be thinking along with God. A little screwed boy walking in fellowship with God would know more than you know. That'll be very humiliating to think, isn't it? Now, it is very important to distinguish between divine wisdom. And he says, now that wisdom that is from above, it's peaceable. Did you get that one? That is, a wise man's always not a troublemaker. It's peaceable. And it's gentle. Little birds, good fruits. You know the different words that are used. Oh, a pile of them. A lot of them. You see, he gives us the characteristics of divine wisdom. It produces character in a man. That character is in keeping with the God of heaven and in keeping with his holy character. Now, if you're reading Proverbs through on this subject, it'll be a very big thing to do. I'm not asking you to do it tonight. But if you ever do, the one thing that you'll see that's emphasized is that it has a great bearing upon the young man, the son, and so on. And then secondly, one other point that is very strongly stressed, now very strongly stressed, and that is its value. Now there's some things you have, and they're all right, but they're not too valuable. Did you get this? There are things you could possess, and really they're not of any great consequence, because you could live without them. We used to hear about the two, well, Mr. Campbell, wasn't it? Matthews, that went to London one day for a visit, and they were looking around the windows in London. This is maybe 100 years ago, and one turned to the other and said, "Did ever you see so many things that you and I can do without?" And there's so many things that you and I can do without. Like, we're not a bit worried whether we have them or not. And if we had them, we haven't got a great lot. We've only just got a lot of stuff that will go to nothing, and we have to leave when we die. But he says, now, when you get a hold of this wisdom, if you can get a hold of this divine wisdom that he's dwelling on, you've got treasures, and it's more valuable than rubies. It's really precious stuff. It's really valuable. You know, things need to be valued. I suppose maybe you were talking in the home there just before we left, the change of values. I don't know if there's not too many of you, but some of you may be a wee bit older, not that so young. I don't think anything could be more surprising to any of us than the change of values in our time. Like, I heard that you're living with a few hundreds, it's now into thousands, and I'm not going to tell you money, don't depend where you're living. But if you could wheel some of them down into the Malone Road, you could send them all right and get an extra pound or two. You see, they have changed their value over the years, do you understand? And things that maybe we think is very precious now mightn't be too valuable later on. And things that maybe we would think very little of now might become very precious later on. I mean, materially. But you see, here's something, man. You dear soul, don't forget it. It's of infinite value. To possess it, you've got a treasure. A treasure that will last for all eternity. Maybe I should put it this way. You don't maybe like me to word it this way. Won't it be wonderful to think? Won't it be wonderful, you young brother, think of this. When you land in heaven, what you have to change your mind about? Now, the man that has been schooled in the wisdom of God, he'll find his mind just hasn't so much of a change to make when he gets up there. Why, he's been thinking along with heaven as he went along. You watch yourself. Because you see, your mind has to develop, and you're expected to enjoy things. Now you say, but I'm no scholar, and I never learned Hebrew, and never learned Greek, and I don't know much about all these verbal terms that I hear them using on the platform, middle voice and active voice and all that type of stuff. I don't know much about that. How could I learn? Look, dear soul, that's not what we're at all. That's not what we're at all. You could be the greatest grammarian that ever lived and know very little about divine wisdom. Divine wisdom's not education. Divine wisdom's not a development of the science of grammar and so on. It's nothing to do with that. Divine wisdom is the understanding of things and viewing things as God would have us look at them. God would have us look at them. And then you see, when it is possessed, you've got something. And you have not only got something, but you've got something very precious and something very, very valuable. I love to think of it, you know, I'm very childish, as you know, in my way of thinking. But I love to think of it this way. I look down at, we'll say, a simple believer in the Lord Jesus. And I can always grasp in my mind. Now, there's a person whose mind has dwelt on things that some of the wiseacres of earth never even thought of. You ever think to your sister that those thoughts you have of Christ and his love and his blood and his death, many never have it. We sing it at times, don't we? How precious are thy thoughts that o'er my spirit go. They swell beyond my thoughts. They captivate my soul. Do you ever think of the thoughts that goes over a believer's mind concerning the person of Christ and concerning God and eternal things? He thinks on things that the world knows nothing about. They're strangers to that whole domain. They've never been in it. And they know nothing about it. We ought to appreciate that. You know, again, you have to bear with me, but I'm not only thankful. I'm not only thankful that I'm saved, but I'm also thankful for any intimacy that God has brought about between my soul and him. That would sound strange. I'm not blame boasting. Don't misunderstand me. We haven't done as much as we'd like. But I think that's wonderful to think that in my little mind, with all its limitations, and you know it's very limited, with all its limitations, I have thoughts of God and thoughts of his dear son. And those are precious. Those are precious. Those are gems.
use your treasures. You wouldn't like to put alongside of them any of the muck and dirt of the world. She wouldn't. You wouldn't want to put alongside of them any of the worldly things that you hear that are so disgusting and so abhorring to the believer. You'd want to see, keep your mind as a storehouse for those precious treasures that are revealed in His holy word. Isn't it great that God is not only a great God and a great God of working and mighty power, but He has been so kind to us that He has actually given us in His word so that we could enjoy it along with Him and enter into thoughts with Him. I think that would help us as Christians, as it ought to be. Yes, dear souls, yes. Now, we need to be very careful that we realize that it's far easier detecting the want of wisdom in others than it is in ourselves. We don't know that. True, dear brethren, they're both in heaven now, so you're not telling them. She's not. You won't tell them. I knew them both well. Exceptionally well. And both were good friends of mine. I had the sorrow of being at both their funerals. Didn't speak at both of them. But I had great respect for them. Even talking to one of them, he'd refer to the other brother. He said, you know, he's a good brother, but he's not always wise. He's not always wise. And if you'd have talked to the other one, he'd have said, now, brother so-and-so's a good man, and he and I's very friendly, but you know, he doesn't always act wisely. Now, what I noticed was this, that one man could see his lack of wisdom, and the other man could see the other man's lack of wisdom, and neither the two of them could discover themselves. You know, sometimes it's easier seeing another man's fault. Couldn't you see a man making a fool of yourself? Two men were going home from a very poor conference. I don't talk about that down here, if you'd never forgive me. But they went home from a very poor conference, dreadful poor conference. They were going home in a jar. And the man says, it's not enough of the meeting we're in. Not enough of meeting. You're very cross. You're tied in the jar. The other man was sitting beside him to see I was glad of not meeting. What are you glad about? He says, I was glad it was me. It wasn't me who was up making a fool of myself. It was them other boys. That was the only pleasure he got out of it. You see, he didn't want to be. He says, I was glad the other boys was making a fool of themselves and not me. So, sometimes, you know, you can see other people making fools of themselves. But don't you watch? We all make mistakes now. We're not talking about mistakes. We're talking about people acting unwisely. Now, will you bring this right down now to realities in life? Now, life, mind you, life's reality. And we only get one go at it. Just one. And in that little life, we want to be careful that we don't act foolishly. There's many a man sitting there, and I'm not hard. And he's sitting with a groaning in his soul, and he knows he has made a serious blunder. And there's many a dear sister now, and maybe we're wiping an odd tear from her eye, and she says, I've made a fool of myself. But the Lord preserves. Now, we don't want to be unkind. And we don't want to trample on anybody that has made mistakes. Now, don't misunderstand us. That's not the way we preach. But we would do something if we could to try and preserve and keep saints from doing things that are totally contrary to God. And they themselves, now, I'm not talking about what others think. They themselves admit, no, I made a fool of myself in what I did. That was a very foolish thing I said. But, isn't it? You see, in James, we're not in any doubt as to how you'll get the wisdom. He says that a mask of God. In Proverbs, it's worded in a sort of an interesting way. And on one hand, now listen very thoughtfully if you can, it's wisdom crying on the streets. Let us touch the ear of the young person who's listening or other person who's listening. Now, listen to, did you get what I said there? Wisdom is crying out. When you come to chapter 3, it's the man crying out for wisdom. In other words, wisdom's crying for attention and the man's crying for wisdom that needs it. There's not a very nice connection with James that I've referred to, that a mask of God. That is, wisdom would want to give you counsel and give you advice and lead you in the right paths for the glory of God. And at the same time, it should be in your heart and in mine, a crying out for God for that wisdom that I so much need.
and by nature so much emptiness. It's so lacking by nature. It doesn't come to the world with us. All you say now, he's out of a very wise family. And he's out of a very sensible family. And who are his people, you know, but they're all very wise and sensible people, his connection. And then that Mary Sarah and all of this, you never would want him had any wisdom, had as much as to do with food at the breakfast time, they'll tell you. He no wisdom at all, no that sort of thing. Now I know we can't help what we will be, what the stock we come from. And any of us have a wee bit of sense, but let's be careful not to boast too much about our ancestors. For we went far enough back, we have little enough to talk about. Far enough back. When somebody said to the late Mr. Campbell, now that's not the Campbell that we knew. I'm talking about the Campbell and Matthews, those men away back 100 years ago or more. And somebody said to him, Mr. Campbell, you must have come of great stock. And he dropped his head. Well, he said, no, my father had a great fall. My father had a great fall. I went back down. And he just thought, well, I began as a poor stock. And none of us went to lift their head about now. Just poor fallen creatures. Now it's nice if you have some relations you can glory in, that's all right. But that's not of any use to us. Look, I've known plenty of good men. And some of the boys that reared men, you weren't the very wisest in this world, and I'm not going to be too hard on them. Now, I know that. We need to be wise about that. It doesn't come to the world with you. Did you get a hold of that young brother? Younger sister, did you get a hold of that? Are you crying out for it? Crying out in despair to get it. Tell me if you have it. Are you listening to the call of wisdom? Are you listening with an open ear? Or are you despising it and saying, I won't take the counsel that God gives, and I won't have his wisdom? You see, that would be a serious thing to do. To throw overboard the very thing that God would want you to have, and know that it's valuable for you to possess. So that you have to be careful that you seek it. We get down to simple things, very simple things. And that is to say, every day that we rise and go about, we never know what we meet with as the minutes go by. We don't know what will come our way. We should be seeking God's face for wisdom for the day that we're starting with. At the very beginning. If we are taking a meeting, you men that preach so much, are standing up with the Word of God, we should constantly seek God's face for wisdom to know what to say and what would be helpful to say. We need wisdom in everything that we go to do. And then, you know, there comes, now I'm not going to go into it, it's a very big subject, but there comes those crises in life, those experiences where we're going to make major changes. Major changes. We need to know that we're acting wisely, that we're acting in the fear of God and with the help of God. I know that you say, but that's touching a very difficult subject. Well, that's all right now. But mind you, God can guide. And God can overrule. And God can control. And God can work. Let us be careful that we seek his face. And that we seek his wisdom. And that we know the blessedness that wisdom brings to our souls. Mind you, can take a step in life. I don't want to be unkind now, do you? But you could take a step in life that would be most costly for you to take. If that were a foolish step. Now you bear with me. I'm trying to help you. I'm not putting fear into you unnecessarily. I don't believe that Christians can't take steps. I do believe they can. And you say, well, I wish I had the wisdom of God and the guidance of God about my present conditions. And now look, dear soul, you don't need guidance for where you're staying. And where you are. It's when you're going to change you need to guidance. Can you manage that? That every man wherein he is called and in abide with God. But when he's going to make changes. Then he needs wisdom. And then he needs guidance. Because he may take a step that would be wrong. and would please the Lord, or he could take a step that would be for the glory of God and for the honor of God. Now I only say that in passing, but we do need wisdom as God's dear people in these vital matters. I'm talking about everyday affairs of life, because that's what these books deal with. It's not the assembly line of things so much. It's just ordinary affairs of life on how to act. Then again, you'll notice, and I don't want to be unreasonable in this, that the cry is coming from another source. Now, I know that anybody handling Proverbs would deal with this. There's the evil woman. And then there's wisdom who has built their houses and so on. There's the good woman and the evil woman. You all know the two women that's mentioned. But the point of this emphasis in this, that the wrong can be very attractive and can be very deceptive and can be very easily, one could be very easily influenced by it, because she comes out with her flatteries and she comes out, no doubt, a picture of the world, if we may call it that, if you want to spiritualize it, a picture of the world, and it would bring out its attractions. And maybe they do appeal to us, don't they, Nat? Worldly things would have an appeal if we didn't watch ourselves. And we say, dear, it would be great if I could enjoy that. It would be great if I could have that. It would be great if I could have something else. And we want to enjoy that. We want to enjoy that. Now, that would be totally wrong. That would be just yielding to the attractions of the world. Whereas God would have us to realize there's another voice calling, and we should open our ear to it. And it would call us into the riches and the glories of God and the honor of his name. It would bring us into the good things that God would have us enjoy. And again, let us be very careful about this, that there's terrible grief and terrible calamity if one acts the fool. I want to be very careful about this. But you don't know, and you younger folk maybe never know, I hope you don't. But many have had painful experiences that they would love to forget about. Why? Because they acted foolishly. They acted without wisdom. And they acted in a way that grieved their own souls. And they showed in their way of behavior that they were acting the fool. Now, you can't do that without paying a heavy price. Whereas, did you notice that in James, when you have finished with all the qualifications of heavenly wisdom, for it is from above, and it's of God, and it is gentle, and it's gracious, and it's patient, and so on. And then he finishes up with good fruits. Aye, good fruits. You know, when it's when the fruits appear. That's the results of our wisdom. Wouldn't it be nice now if when our little day is done, we'd be able to thank God, one and all of us, in his mercy. We learned his wisdom. We learned how to act. And we behaved ourselves as he would have us behave. And we gained that by cleaving to God until he imparted it to us. And when he imparted it to us, then it was from heaven we got it. And being from heaven, God always imparts to his own what is in keeping with his own character. Now, one of the wonders of your Bible, of course, as you know, is this. I'm taking a very broad view of things. God has great purposes. I hope we believe this. He has created beings. He has created heavenly beings, now thousands of them, maybe millions of them, I'm not sure, angelic beings. He has created man. You say, well, what are you going to tell us? Get it out as quick as you can, don't keep us waiting. But what is he doing it all for? What is the major ambition of his heart? Look, dear friend, there are many people and they have treasures, but they wouldn't want to share them. There are many people and they have secrets and they wouldn't want to tell them. But God has infinite treasures and he has infinite secrets and he wants to impart them to created beings so that they would enjoy it with him. And you just bring and think, thought, isn't it? That they would enjoy what God enjoys. He would share with them his wisdom. Now I know their capacity. Now don't be misunderstanding. You all know I'm not so stupid as to believe that a human being can think as deeply and as greatly as God can think. We wouldn't think of that for a moment. But we do think that the delight of the heart of God is to find a creature thinking along with himself. I mean, that's a big change to what the way they thought before they were saved. Now, isn't it? Now, be honest about it. Viewing things as he would see them. Appreciating what he values. You get that? Sometimes you might be in difficulty to know what about something. You say to yourself, I wonder, is there anything wrong with that? Now, that's a very bad question to ask. Never ask if there's anything wrong with a thing. Ask if there's any profit in it, if they're more sensible. But you say to yourself, there can't be much wrong with that, and there can't be much wrong with this. Tell me, one of the simplest answers to your question is this, just to ask one question to your own mind. What does God think of that? Now, if you could think of it as God would see it, and view it as the Almighty would view it, you'd be acting wisely. That of a wisdom coming into your being. You mightn't think of wisdom when you're doing it, and we're not asking you to, and you mightn't even think that you're acting wisely. But if you're thinking along with the Almighty, and judging things as the Almighty judges them, and seeing things as God sees them, and keeping step with the Almighty on the path that you're on, then, dear soul, you're entered into wisdom. Now, you know that if I could go on with this, but if you take it in Proverbs, and I'm sure you men sometimes on the Lord's Day morning, some of you would read Proverbs 8. And you'd read the words concerning wisdom. And actually, this wisdom is the topic. Now, we must be fair. But the language is such, that it can be applied, and I judge rightly, to our blessed Lord. Now, what do you want to say to somebody? I want to tell you something. He was wisdom personified. In other words, wisdom's in a person. It's not only a principle, but it's fully enjoyed by that person. Wasn't it great for the Almighty to look down upon earth and see upon the sands of time a perfect man with a perfect mind acting in perfect wisdom and doing everything in absolute harmony with heaven above? I was enjoying the Sunday morning, was their last Lord's Day. I'm very simple, as you know, my way of thinking. But I was enjoying those few words. Now, you've heard them often read, and I've heard them for a lifetime. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Oh, so somebody's not a big year about that. You know, it comes to me in a fresh way. Now, I know it was, I should have seen it maybe years ago. But the thought came into me along like this. This is my beloved Son. There are many people have sons they love, but they couldn't say they're pleasing them. Did you follow that? They love their son, but the son's not always pleasing them. But God not only looked down upon a son he loved, but he looked down upon a son that was pleasing, in whom I am well pleased. Isn't it great to think that the Almighty found delight in the dear son that he loved? Oh, many a son has broken his father's heart and grieved his father. But here's one who has a son he loved. And you see, he is wisdom personified. Yes, he says, I was as one brought up with him. I was daily his delight. You've all read those words on a Lord's Day morning. And yes, and his delights were with the sons of men. And you've seen that all in your mind, and rightly so. We're not blaming you. But actually, that is all to do with wisdom. And you could see it in your mind. That the person of our Lord Jesus from all eternity has been the delight of God's heart and the joy of his whole being because he was one who was wisdom personified. What about you, dear child of God? Don't want to keep his head because I'd never be forgiven if I run over the time. What about you, dear child of God? Now, we don't want to be unkind to you. Do you really feel that you're pleasing God?
There, you can't think of pleasing God without knowing what His will is. So that's why you need the wisdom to know what God would want you to do. Now you need the wisdom. And then you need the power of God to fulfill. And He alone can enable you to fulfill that which wisdom teaches. So that in a wise way, with the help of God, you're able to behave yourself in this world in a way that brings delight to His heart. And don't forget now, don't forget, there are other forces tugging at you that will pull you into the other way. Other forces trying to drag you away and try to attract you into bypath meadow and try to spoil your life. And if that would happen, you'd never forgive yourself. You'd be grieved at the very end of the journey. Oh, may the Lord help us. We all need it. Isn't it great to think that God not only has wisdom, He has, you know that, but He's willing to impart it. He gives it willingly, and He doesn't upbraid even when we misuse it. It's marvelous to think that I'm asked of God. Now, will you go home tonight, dear child of God? You, dear young sisters and brethren, now we're not being kind to you. You ask the Lord to give you wisdom, to know how to act in this world, and how to order your life, so that when it's over, you'll have no regrets, and you'll say, thank God. Thank God, in spite of my not your folly, and in spite of my not your weaknesses, I've been preserved in a path that pleases Him, and I'm living in the enjoyment of that, even to the very last breath. Quite a number, and we say this in closing, and I don't like it, I don't like to hear it, and they say to themselves at the end of the journey, well, if I had my life to live over again, I would live different. Now you see, pity is you don't get over again. That's you need to like that. I often tell about a man that I stayed with. He used to take me for a walk. He believed a preacher should have a walk every day. He took me for a walk. He turned around one day and he looked at me. I want to ask you something. He says, if this was your last day on earth, what way would you live it? So I think I should do what I'm doing. I don't see any change of thing. See what I mean? You just ask yourself, if this was your last day on earth, is this the way you'd want to live it? Well, no need to change. Do what we can for the Lord, as the Lord helps us, and serve Him as best we can until we see His face. May the Lord help us. Oh, may the Lord preserve us. We hope none of us will make fools of ourselves, but that we will be preserved until the last breath. Shall we pray?